Welcome to the Adam Savage Project. I'm Adam.
I'm Norm.
And I'm Laura.
Hi, Laura Kump.
Hi.
It is so good to see you. I see outside the window. It's dark there because you're in Cologne. And
right.
It's the end of the workday there. It's like 6 o'clock, 5 o'clock?
Yes, exactly. It's 6 o'clock. It's almost the end of my workday, but I think I will keep going a little longer because I had a fantastic workday and I don't want it to end.
Okay. So I participated a little bit in an amazing thing you did last week for Lenovo called For All of Us Fridays, where you built a steel wool powered Catherine wheel spraying sparks 30 meters into the German sky last Friday.
It was fantastic. Yeah, I was asked to build something spectacular, and my neighbor is a scrapyard guy, so he brought me a huge motor a couple weeks ago, and I wanted to do something with this motor. It has 2.8 horsepower, so it's three-phase. It's very, very powerful, very, very awesome. And then I played around with lights and fire and all these things, and eventually I remembered that if you put steel wool on fire and you spin it around or you expose it to oxygen, it just sparks and lights up like crazy. So I basically built this huge propeller for the motor that has a big cage that I could pack with probably half a kilo of steel wool and then spin it around. And it was more impressive and intense than I anticipated, to be honest.
It was so beautiful to watch it go. And you did three runs on the live feed. And on the last one, you had stuffed the container full of steel wool. And you eventually got that to lid. And it was shocking. Even on like the 10 frames per second webcam I was looking at, it was spectacular.
Yes, it was big. And it didn't stop. Like I did some tests with a little bit of steel wool. And it would light up for maybe 10, 15 seconds. And the last one we did, I think it was going for a minute or something. It just didn't stop.
It just kept on. It was, So you ended up building a machine that's very much reminded me of my early days in San Francisco. Are you familiar with the work of the Machine Art Collective Survival Research Laboratories?
No, but I will look that up.
Super important. They are super important. There's a German sculptor whose name is Bastian, whose last name escapes me, who worked with them. And he's one of those guys who built his whole machine shop on the, after the wall came down with all the machines.
They were on the street. Nice.
Anyway, Survival Research Labs, all they did was build giant machines that did scary things. And they had a whip antenna on the end of a giant motor that it was, when it was going, the end of the whip was breaking the speed of sound something like 3,000 times per minute.
Okay.
When you went to Survival Research Lab shows, you put in earplugs and then you put ear cups over the earplugs. And even with that, the machine was so loud, my body told me we are afraid for our life, right? Like it was a physical feeling of needing to run in the opposite direction. And I was watching your thing go and thought, oh, here's the other one they built. They built a 2x4 thrower.
Oh, no.
So they took a motor like yours and they mounted a car tire to it.
Okay.
And they put it right above another car tire.
Adjusted
the distance so you could feed a 2x4 between them. But here's the best part. When they got the truck tire up to speed, they couldn't get the 2x4 in because it turns out when a tire spins up, it actually expands its size a little bit.
Interesting. Yeah.
Right? Like the weird bits of physics you wouldn't know until you did something that extreme. So they adjusted them. And this thing hurled 2x4s at hundreds of miles per hour.
Oh my God. That's the scariest thing.
Their shows were always, I mean, one of the things you got at their shows was a fear of dying. Like you sat in an audience and like things were so hot and so scary and so amazing that you feared for your life. And that was part of the ticket price.
Do they still do stuff? Do they still exist as a combo?
Their fearless leader, Mark Pauline, used to have a shop. Normie used to have a shop right at Potrero and Chavez. He had this.
Right, and you did the interview with a bunch of them a couple of years ago with a new collective down there, the Dogpatch area,
Yeah, so Mark Pauline relocated up to Petaluma, and he's still making stuff. He's still a mad scientist up there. A lot of the people that he worked with, I still am in contact with a bunch of those guys. Many of them helped us on Mythbusters. Mm-hmm. When we did the Tesla coil episode with the stun gun, that was Greg Lay, the head electronics guy at SRL. They were they're a really important machine art collective. And in the U.S., we don't celebrate that as much as we should.
It's so funny. I think of the work they've done, SRL, like I also associate with the media in which it was documented. Like the VHS era is totally associated. And like you guys as builders and documenters, like, you know, when I think of Mythbusters and the things you guys made, I also think of like the cable TV era television, right? Look.
Yeah.
Right? And then Laura, like the very much of a YouTube, you know, self-filmed look. It's so interesting that it's not just the things that you make, but how you guys are filming it, that it's so tied to, you know, that aesthetic.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's so funny. You're right. The medium is the, Laura, so after such a big week, and I'm sure there were all sorts of behind the scenes stuff that made it even more complicated.
Yes.
What did you do today? Since you're almost at the end of your day and you said it was excellent, what did you do today?
I thought about what it is that would be really, really good for me, what it is that I could do to treat myself with. And this morning I decided that I will reorganize my screw supplies and my whole back stock of consumables. And it's been a wonderful day just taking stock. What do I have? What do I need? I have probably like 200 different sizes of brass wood screws.
There's a never-ending amount of those.
Yes. Like all the sizes you could possibly ever need. And I love them, like the flathead brass screws that are so delicate, and you always have to buy twice as many as you need because you will, you know, crack the heads or destroy the little,
So, sorry, discussing flathead screw slots and munging them because I don't know if you watched one of my Samaritan builds, but I discovered a thing called a gunsmith's screwdriver.
I got a comment today from somebody who said, look up Adam's video. He has a solution for that.
Okay. So if you think about the slot of a screw like this, Laura, right?
Yeah.
It is this, right? And a normal screwdriver goes in, and the normal screwdriver is wedge shaped.
Yes. True.
When it goes into the slot, where it activates the hole is up at the top left.
Yeah.
That's why normal screwdrivers munch brass screws. So a gunsmith screwdriver is hollow ground. So it's got parallel end, and it puts its torque at the bottom of the flathead screw channel. And therefore, so normal gunsmiths have like 40 sizes of these, but you can find them on Amazon. I found a set of three for like $18 that are gorgeous. I'll send you the link. Included the link in our pod, in our thing. So we'll send it to you. It's changed my life. It turns out there's a screwdriver for not messing up screws.
Oh, that's good. So good to know. So good to know. And I had no idea. The way I usually do it is I take another screw, like a Torx or a Phillips head, and screw that in, take it out again, and then I take the brass screw, put a little wax on it. That's how I do it. It takes so much time. But that's what I love about them. If you see a piece of furniture that has flathead brass screws, you know, like there's this extra mile that the creator went to make it look like that. I love that. Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's what I did. And it's actually funny because years ago, probably like 5 years ago, I think it was before I started making YouTube videos or when I just got started, I watched a video of your Sodimo boxes, of your big. And I was so impressed. And I went online and I bought three of those boxes. They were pretty expensive. And I still remember feeling like this is not a right time to put so much money into three boxes. It doesn't make any sense. But I wanted to have them. And that's why I put a lot of the, I don't know, like brass screws that are super important for me. They went into those boxes, but I never extended that system. And eventually I found out why. It's because I don't like primal colors, and I don't like that I don't like that the boxes come with a color code. So the smallest boxes are red, the biggest boxes are green or whatever it is. And I think that was my problem with it. So now I've found a system that has gray boxes in different sizes, and I'm using that system, and it works out.
I will tell you, there are people online trading 3D files for printing Sortimo boxes.
Oh, yeah? So they can have their own sorters, colors? Right.
They can have whatever colors they want. Also, yeah. I would imagine, since Sortimo, I think, is out of Germany, I think you should reach out to them, and they could give you, like, hundreds of boxes for your shop.
Yeah, but I work with Festool, and they have the Sustainers, and they have the Sortainer, and that comes with the gray boxes. But thank you.
Totally checks out.
It was such a good information for me to understand that I can't deal with preset colors. I just can't understand the different color codes. I need to make my own. That was a big understanding for me.
I totally get that. And there's a way in which for us as makers, figuring out your point of view, like we're always looking at a piece of furniture and wondering, oh, what's my point of view on this thing that I'm making? Mm-hmm. But equally importantly, there's a point of view in process and organization.
Yes.
And when you come across one of those things of, oh, I can't deal with this.
Yes.
That's why it's always sucked.
Yeah.
It's massive when you come up with that clarity.
Absolutely. It's finding out the positive things that work and finding the negative. It's so equally valuable. You know, yeah. So that was a big moment. And now I'm trying to come up with a good color code. I want to change out the snaps from the different boxes so I can instantly tell the ones with the white snaps are for wood, the ones with the blue snaps are for, you know, machine screws or whatever. So I'm really making a deep dive on shop organization and taking inventory this week. And it's perfect. I love it.
That is so awesome. That is exactly how I self-soothe after big projects.
Yeah, you go to the shop and play around and organize and yeah.
Yeah, I look at a shelf and I did this last week. I pulled down all my wire. I had like 75 spools of wire and I realized I only used a dozen of them. So I put most of them in deep storage and I'm still working in my head how the size of container for the new wire.
Yeah. That's meditation work, I call it. Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I think it's also interesting because my screw system so far, I had all my screws in different tobacco boxes. Mm-hmm. So it was an infinitive storage system because, or what is it? Finitive. What's when it's ending?
It's finite.
Finite. And I kind of lost overview of what I have and where I have it. And I think by reorganizing, like what are the empty boxes, those are the screws that I use most often, I should have more stock on them. You know, I kind of understand what's the screws that I like to work with. What are the dimensions that I need? Do I like the inbus heads or the you know, flat heads? Or it's really interesting because I understand my own work by taking inventory of what's gone, if that makes sense. I think I'm I made such a deep dive. I'm too deep into it.
I'm so right there with you because I realize that when we organize in our shop, we're not actually, when we're organizing anything in our shop correctly, that's a second step because the first step is that we had to figure out what the organization scheme was in here first.
Yeah.
And then once we've got this one's really easy, but frequently this one's really weird because we haven't understood this one yet.
Yeah, that's true.
That's part of my trick of like, if you're wondering, like if you have a weird thing, like, oh, I have a microphone, where should I put this microphone? I think, where would I look for this right this second if I needed it? Oh, mm-hmm. On that shelf up there. And then I like go and I put it up on that shelf.
Yeah, that's good.
So are you in your shop right now or are you in your house?
I'm in my studio. I moved shops for the 100th time last year. And I have a downstairs and an upstairs now. So downstairs is my workshop and upstairs is my studio. And that's a big luxury. Yeah. So I stay here probably 3 or 4 nights of the week. And then I still have a place with my girlfriend in Cologne. But I have my alone time here in the studio and I can nerd out about sorting screws.
Do you have a big enough space where you could like pull a car indoors?
It would be if I would be less into motorcycles, because the car way is blocked by 6 motorcycles right now. That's the upside on living on the country, because there are people having the coolest stuff in their garages and in their barns, and they just don't know what to do with it. I bought so many cool things for next to nothing. And it's really good. The country life is right for me. I always was scared to move to the countryside, but I'm so happy I made that step. It's a game changer. Yeah.
What's your go-to motorcycle? What's your favorite one right now?
I love the Yamaha DTs. So I have 2 from the 80s. One is a 400cc and one is a 175cc.
175. You can get a lot of trouble with one of those little ones.
Yep.
I had a mid-80s Yamaha 650.
Oh, nice. That's powerful. Yeah.
It was that thing. I replaced the engine and the wiring harness, and I still had the same problems. I
That's it, Yamaha. Was haunted. Yeah, it was haunted. That's fun.
Tell us how COVID has been where you are. Are you seeing other human beings yet?
We are facing another hard lockdown in Germany. So starting tomorrow, is that tomorrow? I think, yeah, everything will close down again. My opinion is that is the way to do it. People should stay home if possible. I understand how horrible this affects people. Still, it didn't work out. We tried a soft lockdown the last couple of weeks with schools and kindergartens and stores being open, and it doesn't work. So we need to go on a hard lockdown. And I mean, as you guys, we can still work. That's a huge privilege during these times. But it did affect me, because I started producing my own TV show for children, which is fantastic. It's a part of a German TV show that has been running for 50 years. So I grew up on that show. It's like Sesame Street.
Unbelievable.
Basically. Yeah. And I got a segment in that show, where it's about making stuff, and it's really, really cool. I've been working with them for a couple years now, and it started with more crafty things. And over the time, we developed that it is okay to show children things that they can't do, but that they can play, you know? So by now, I can weld on the show, I can use a table saw and all of these things. It's so fantastic. Like, I'm so proud of this. It's so fantastic, especially since I can produce the episodes myself. Yeah. But COVID pumped the brakes on this whole project. Right. The week before we had the first lockdown was the week that my first episode aired. So everything that comes with it, being on the talk shows and promoting it, it completely got stopped. But still, we are working on it just a little slower than we probably would have. But everything that is outside of my YouTube stuff, of course, has been on hold or put in the freezer.
But in long-term storage, same over here.
Yeah. I mean, it has 2 sides. I miss seeing people. I miss having input from other people. The last trip I did last year before everything hit was in autumn, and I went to Portland and to New York, and I actually went to Tom Sachs's studio, and I had a lot of travel going on, so I wrote him a text like, can I come and just sweep your floor? I need to be in a workshop. I need to do something. I need to work with my hands. So he gave me occupational therapy for 2 days in his shop. And I still have energy and excitement and inspiration from those 2 days. And I really missed it this year to, you know, work with you, work with Simone, work with other creators, meet people who do completely different things than I do.
Yeah.
But I'm one of the lucky people who can work and who can make a living with that. So I don't want to complain.
No, I'm also curious if it's changed your shop practice, if it's changed your relationship to working in the shop.
Yes, everything is more relaxed because I have more time. Right. Before COVID, I was traveling a lot and I had a lot of side projects. So my videos, I would probably have 2 to 3 days to work on the videos. And now I have 7 days. And that makes a big difference. I thought about making more content, but I luckily decided not to and just take more time also for myself, relaxing a little bit more, the walks with my dog are a little bit longer and everything is a little bit more relaxed. And after 5 years of YouTube, I could really use that. So I'm on one side, I'm happy.
You're doing all your own editing, is that correct?
Yes, I do everything, which is so cool. That was the plan for 2020, was to build my team, to get a cameraman, to get an editor, to get rid of all of that stuff. And I am happy to learn that I really enjoy doing these things. I just need the time to do them. And that was a thing. I hope I can translate that into the world after COVID, when we're hopefully allowed to travel again. That I remember, like, no, you don't hate editing. You just hate editing under pressure. So you should take your time doing it.
That much is true. Oh, my gosh. Like, when you double up the amount of time you have on a project, do you think I'm going to double my workshop time or double my filming time, you know, setups, or double my editing time? Like, where? How do you think about where you want to distribute that?
Workshop time, definitely. Yeah. That's where I recharge. I learned over the years that I'm an introvert. I didn't know that about myself. I always thought I was extroverted, but I think I'm an introvert, and the time in the workshop just gives me energy. Being alone, figuring stuff out, failing on my own terms, that just gives me so much energy, and everything else is very exhausting for me. So I try to give myself as much workshop time as I can.
It's an antidepressant, isn't it?
It is. It is. And I get questioned, or people ask me why my videos are not more instructional, why I don't do a voiceover, why I don't do plans for that. And that's another thing I learned about myself. Is I don't like to follow an instruction. I like to. So when I'm going to the shop, I rarely sketch anything. I have an idea of how, if I want to build a table, I have an idea of how I want the table to feel like, and probably one or two features or materials that I want to use. That's the stuff that gets me excited to do it. But everything else, I don't want to know, because it feels like I'm reading myself a story that I don't know the ending to. So it's very, very entertaining not to know how this works and not to know that this is the right path. You know, I enjoy failing. I enjoy problem solving. And that's why I'm so bad at doing instructions, because I don't like instructions.
But that's what you're doing is you're super honestly making the videos for yourself, the videos that you would be watching if you didn't exist.
Exactly. If I wanted to learn from somebody, I would like to watch these videos. Yeah.
I feel like it's the same with us, right? We joke that we don't make how-to videos mostly. Mm-hmm. We have made a few, but we make mostly what happened videos.
That's true. That's a good way to put it.
It's like a chronicle, right?
Uh-huh. And people like just hanging out in the shop or feeling like they're there, you know, while in warts and all.
Yeah.
That antidepressant thing, at some point in the last few weeks, I don't even remember what happened, but some bad news came down the pike and I was very sad about it. And I was really like surprised, because my first thought was, I just want to go stand in front of the workbench. Everything makes sense there. Everything makes sense looking at that clean bench. And as I speak, I built a present for a relative yesterday as a one day build. Mm-hmm. And I ended up staying until like 7:30 at night to finish it. And I was like, we're going to finish this today. And I did. And then I just left and the shop is like a bomb went off.
Yes.
And it's what I'm going to do. I'm going to shoot a piece this morning about leaving the shop like that, saying thank you and I'm sorry, cleaning it up and getting back to square one.
Nice. Yeah, that's also meditation. And that only works if you have an organization that you can follow. Then cleaning a shop that doesn't have a form of organization is a nightmare. But if you know where stuff belongs, it is meditation. But since I'm fairly new to this shop, I still have to come up with all of these systems. Where do I put what? Where can I find what? Because I have 6 different shops in my head. If I'm looking for something, where are the light bulbs? And then I go through all my shops. It should be in that box.
It's a lovely scene regarding the organization. It's a lovely scene at Tom Sachs' studio, isn't it? With everything having a place.
But I think that also comes from him having a big team. You know, if you have to micromanage everybody, where's the slit screw or flathead screwdriver, blah, 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 you know, you would lose your mind. So he has to have a good system when more than 2 people work on a project and it still has to look like one person did it. You know, There has to be systems in place. It's really
that
cool.
Whole area on the main floor where he stores all the paints and the expendable like shopping. Mm-hmm. He completely overhauled that a couple of years ago. Like even there, where it's a very efficient and very established system, he pulls whole chunks out and completely reorganizes. Mm.
I learned over the years another thing. Like, I'm doing some self-reflection here, so thank you for the therapy session.
Of course. We're here for you.
It is just so important to stick to the stuff that you can work with. And that's something that I learned from you and also from Tom. You're so specific about certain things. No, it has to be this pencil. I can only work with this pencil. And I always felt like there are certain things that I need to have in order to do my job good. But expressing these things when working in teams, I also always felt like a diva. But it is, it's not like I'm asking for 100 white roses. I just need this, I just need this certain kind of gaffer's tape. Otherwise, it won't look the way I want it to look. So being okay with being very specific, like the Papermate pencils, you are a big fan of those too, right? I need to have them. Otherwise, I can't write.
I'm totally there with you. People keep sending me beautiful mechanical pencils.
No, I don't want them. Yeah, it's interesting.
Again, that point of view, though, I keep going back to this idea that when you have a point of view, something really important is happening. Mm-hmm. When you make a call of like, this is easier than this. This gets more out of me than this. And being willing to constantly change it up. Like, you know, someone gave me some Blackwing pencils, the the famous pencil nerd pencil. And I love these.
Got them too.
You know, it's funny. I was in a friend's studio in Chicago a few years ago, and he had one of these sticking out of just a bottle, you know, full of pens. Mm-hmm. And I looked over and I said, is that a Blackwing? And he literally rang a bell and went, pencil nerd! But like, I'll try it. I tried it. I don't love it.
No, me too. I have three of them. I bought them in San Francisco. One of them I tried to use. I never, like, I put the other two in the thing. And I like to see them. It's a good object. It gives me, you know, joy to look at it. I just don't want to use it.
No.
It's interesting. I like that. But that's how you find what's important to you and how your process works and all of these things. When people ask me, like, how did you end up having this super specific career and this super specific job? I would say it's basically, I never followed my dream. I always avoided my nightmares, and that's how I ended up here. So.
But I think that all those decisions are the same decision. Like when I don't think I have an example in here, but when I'm making a real artistic sculptural decision about an aesthetic thing, mm-hmm. which is one of the most fun things we get to do in the world, I'm applying a lifetime of points of view about what matters to me. Mm-hmm. And that's what art is. That's what any art or culture really is. It's people externalizing a point of view that, if they're really being honest, is a universal experience with all of us. Mm. But I think there's just as much power in knowing I got to use a Papermate Sharpwriter number 2 as in I think this sculpture I'm making should be blood red.
Yes.
Those are both the same amount of importance of decision, because they're about the operator and what is important to them.
Mm-hmm. And that makes designing stuff also gets easier if you are a hoarder, I think. Because I surround myself with cool stuff constantly. Whenever I see an interesting piece of metal or an old machine that I like the label of, or a piece of wood that I think is beautiful, I take it with me. And the next time I need a piece of wood, I have a selection of 15 different pieces that I collected over the years for a specific reason. And I never go to the store and buy a brand new 2x4. And that's why my stuff looks the way it does, because I'm a hoarder and I have an organized hoarder.
Yes, but a note, here's something that has happened to me. Recently, this happened to me. I was about to use something for a piece I was working on. And then I was looking at my stock and I was like, oh my God, I'm going to use the last of these.
Oh no.
And then I thought, you idiot, this is the rainy day you were saving these for. There is no other rainy day. This is the purpose. But sometimes I'm like, oh, I don't want to use it. I've been saving it. Yes, you've been saving it for this moment.
Yes, yes. And also we can always take it apart again. Like the machine I built, I will take it apart again probably, or build a disk sander or something like that. But it doesn't have to stay a fiery wheel. So always having in the back of my mind, because the motor was super precious, like, do I want to waste it, quote unquote, for this project? Like, yes, because I will take it apart again and have it for something else.
It's I think you could totally make a disc sander out of it.
I think so too. It's all there. And you need to tell me how big yours is, because I want to make mine slightly bigger.
I think mine is about 45 centimeters, 16 inches.
Okay, good. Good
to know.
Is that
45 centimeters? No, that's about...
It could be. The
16 inches, 30 centimeters per foot, plus a third. It's 40 almost centimeters.
Okay, good. 50 it is for me then.
My bugbear, I've been doing some carpentry this week, and my bugbear in carpentry is bevel joints.
Yes.
There are so many ways to screw up a bevel joint.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I was trying to use my bandsaw and then trying to use my disc sander to clean them. And it turns out, Laura, I just discovered that my disc sander has a table in front of it with a slot in the table. So I can use a square.
Mm-hmm.
The slot isn't parallel with the disc.
No.
And I almost screwed up a piece I'd spent like 4 hours making by just assuming that it was parallel. And then I ran and I was like, oh, it's off by like a quarter of an inch across. Yeah, I have to figure it out this week.
Yeah, but that's another therapy session in the workshop then, like figuring out how to make this parallel. I had the best discovery a couple weeks ago. Because I got a new bandsaw that's pretty heavy duty. Oh, it's a good one. I will send you a picture. You will love it. It's from the 80s. Do. It's an old metal bandsaw. It has a little welding attachment so you can weld your own saw blades. Oh, yeah. So good. So I got this bandsaw and I wanted to build a table. And I wanted to find a way to build a tabletop on the bandsaw. That was my intention, just because I love this machine so much. And then I realized a really cool trick how you can make perfect tabletops without stressing about the joints being super square when you have live edge boards.
Yeah.
Do you know how if you cut wallpaper, you do wallpaper, you overlap two pieces and you cut down in the middle of them where they overlap and then you have a perfect joint? You can do that on the bandsaw with two boards. So I overlap the boards where they have the live edge. And then I just cut through it following the grain of the upper board. It's just a wonky, wobbly cut, but it fits perfect. And also you don't see the joint because it's not straight. It follows the grain.
Wow.
It is so beautiful. It's so beautiful and so simple. I made a video about that.
Oh, that's really lovely. Of course, because every single, like the saw adds this kind of a stepped thing,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
But because that's matched across both surfaces, the join is just
and it's the glue surface is bigger, so it's very, very strong. I don't know if you noticed during the live stream, I was standing outside at my heated bar and the tabletop is that tabletop that I built, and it was super bowed. And that's because I screwed it to a metal frame just to make a point that even if this is permanently attached, which you're not allowed to do with solid wood tabletops, they have to be able to move around a little bit. So I screwed them on a steel base just to trap them, and then I heated this little I don't know, it's like an oven under it, so the wood really wants to expand. And it did, to a point where it bowed up, but the glue joints didn't break. I just wanted to prove that the joints are so strong that they will not break. And that's why the tabletop is so bowed and so wonky, just to make
that's
a point.
Awesome. You could increase the gluing surface area if you made it not a vertical cut, but you did a scarf joint.
Ooh. Oh, now we're getting funky. Yeah. Cool. I will try that.
You know, it's been funny doing carpentry this week because, number one, I forgot about the dust. it's just the, my whole life is dust right now. But I also forgot my, I used to say this, I find welding and steel way more forgiving than wood. Mm-hmm. And a lot, I was surprised when I first had that point of view, but I hold to it because if I screw something up in welding, it's way easier for me to fill it, grind it and go back to zero. Whereas wood, it's like always just got to throw that piece out and start again.
Yes, 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 yes. Wood is tricky, especially if you go into the fine woodworking stuff where it matters about moisture of the wood and your chisels really have to be sharp and movement and all of these things. Once you get to that level, it gets tricky. I try to ignore all of these facts and just try to have fun.
I recently had this. I had to dry out some pieces of wood and I ended up building a plywood box with a blow dryer in it that I filled with a gallon of desiccant.
What's desiccant?
Desiccant is silica, like a
moisture absorber. Oh, is that the do not eat packages?
Yeah. I had a gallon bucket of that because I've got a little bit of desiccant in every one of my costume bags to keep the moisture low.
Right. Okay.
And I poured that and I was able to reduce the moisture from about 25% to about 8%.
Oh, wow. Do you have a meter, like a moisture meter for that? Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's another cool thing about living on the countryside, because everybody has like oak slabs in their backyard that they haven't been using for 30 years. Like, do you want them?
Yes. Oh, my God. I want to live next door to you, Laura.
Yeah, I found the perfect. Did I mention that my neighbor is a scrappy? So he drives by my shop with a truckload full of trash, quote unquote. Oh, it's so wonderful. That's all I want.
It's all you got. You got it. Yeah. It's the brass ring.
Yeah, it's a good symbi. I always imagine the scrappy and I, he's like the crocodile and I'm the little bird that cleans his teeth. You know, it's a perfect combination.
I think that's got to be a sculpture or something. Yeah. I think that's a great place to stop. Laura, every time I talk to you, I'm inspired.
Same here.
I really
Thank
am.
You. And we talked a lot lately. I feel like
we
never what talked so much before. Absolutely. I hope you guys stay safe and you have a good time over Christmas, even with all the new restrictions and all of that.
You too. You too, Laura. And hopefully in 2021, we'll get to make something together. Let's do it.
Please. Anytime. As soon as I can travel again, I'm there.
Okay. Awesome. Thanks,
Laura. Thank you so much for having me. Take care.
Anytime.
Bye.